Welcome everyone to the Longhorn Republic, your source for Texas Longhorn news, sports, and opinions with a bit of snark built. And we are a member of the 1012 Podcast Network, and you can find more great coverage of all the Big 12 schools over at 1012network.com. If you like what we do, please leave us a rating or review on Apple Podcasts. Helps get the show out there. Share this with your friends wherever you found it, whether it was Apple Podcasts, Spotify, TuneIn, anywhere where you find fine podcast content. You can find Kyle and myself. Connect with us on social media at Longhorn Pod on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram, Longhorn Republic. Shoot us an email, longhornrepublicpod@gmail.com. I'd also like to remind you, this podcast is brought to you by our friends over at Charlie Hustle Clothing Company. They are a vintage-inspired clothing company based out of Kansas City that specializes in collegiate and hometown apparel. They've got all of the things you need to be the best dressed fan this season, so be sure to check out their wide selection of officially licensed apparel today and show off your school spirit all year long. They got more than 30 schools to choose from, and you can get 15% off any non-sale item by using the code 101215 at checkout. We've also got a special giveaway from our friends, again, over at Charlie Hustle this week to celebrate the Texas-Oklahoma Red River Softball Series this weekend. We've got a giveaway that'll be going starting tomorrow on our Twitter, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. You can enter in to win they call it a raglan, but it's like that three-quarter sleeve tee situation that I absolutely love. You can check it out. We'll drop the link on our Twitter tomorrow, but to enter, you have to be following us, following Charlie Hustle, and reshare, retweet, whatever you want to call it. The tweet with the contest in it will pick a winner on Friday, and you will get your whatever size you want of that raglan shirt. It's really, really dope. So I am jealous because Kyle and I cannot win that one. I might just have to buy it myself. My name is Gerald Goodridge. I'm your host this week, like I am every week. And I'm joined by a man who has a great day when Kim Mulkey has a bad one, Kyle Carpenter. Kyle, how are you?
Women's basketball is legitimately, we've talked about it. It's been fun watching, but the Caitlin Clark versus LSU stars, and I don't want to just leave it at Angel because there's some great players on that team. And I honestly wish I could root for LSU. I like the mentality of how they play the villain, if everything except Kim Mulkey. So I wish there was a way Kim Mulkey could just get like suspended for a game and then watch the entire social media just take on and cheer for LSU and show that they love everything about her team except, well, her.
Yeah, I mean, that is the thing. Like, I was texting, I think, you about it. Like, it really takes Kim Mulkey for me to cheer for Iowa basketball. Like, you got me cheering for a Big Ten school. What the heck is going on? But we're actually here to talk about the women's NCAA tournament, the women's March Madness, but not about the games that happened Monday because, well, Texas wasn't in any of them, which sucks, but that's either here nor there. Texas goes to the Sweet 16, dominated Gonzaga there, and then falls to NC State, who had a career night from one of their stars and just an overall incredible night to put Texas away, unable to get over that Elite Eight hump that they've had under Vic Schaefer. So we'll talk about that. I got some more comments from Steve Sarkisian Tuesday about spring practice, and we'll talk a bit about football. Down the 40, a lot of action on campus this weekend. Got some BOL, some coaching changes, things like that. And we'll close the show out with Godzillatron and some Bang the Drum. But we'll start out with those Texas ladies who got not only the deepest run of any basketball team on campus this year in the Big 12. Yeah, period. Men's or women's. But they also put out an absolutely dominating performance against Gonzaga. Really, Gonzaga was an incredible scoring team, and they absolutely shut him down. They played Vic Schaefer's favorite brand of basketball. Didn't even need to take off his suit coat. That's how well Texas played defensively. Absolutely crushed it. Got big games from their big stars. The Elite Eight, not so much. Again, Texas struggled in that one, really. And it was the differentiator. You could look at a lot of different things. Three-pointers are a big differentiator, but really, NC State got them in foul trouble in the second quarter, capitalized on that, went to the free throw line 7 more times, converted on 6 of those, and had a 7-point lead at halftime. So that really was, in my mind, the big differentiator there was getting Texas's bigs in foul trouble. We'll talk about that. But again, Texas could not erase that deficit and fell in the Elite Eight. NC State going to the Final Four. Had a it was a mixed weekend, Kyle. I mean, it's hard to be upset about an Elite Eight run, especially when this team, again, we talked about it all the time, been playing without Rory Harmon basically the whole season. But this team defied those expectations and was, honestly, they could have and should have potentially won that game if they had tweaked and changed a few things. Three-point defense was, I mean, the struggles that we've seen from them all year, I'll say it like that, the struggles we've seen from them all year, both offensively and defensively, showed up in this game in a big way.
Yeah, I mean, look, start exactly where you said it, Jared. This team overachieved. Like, just say it. Getting to the Elite Eight this year after Harmon went down, I think, as good as that team was, no one saw that coming, right? You have to be proud of the effort, the performance, and again, making it to an Elite Eight is not easy to do no matter what. They would have played South Carolina in the next game, and look, as good as I think this Texas team is, there's no way they were getting past South Carolina. So the season ended one game early, basically. I would have loved a chance to have Vic go up against his old nemesis, Dawn Staley. That one's coming soon enough, probably in a championship game, but or in the SEC soon enough. But I will say the way it happened was tough, because all year we've known the Achilles heel of the defense that this team plays, which is, you know, can be aggressive pressuring, can be right on top of people to smother the movement of an offense, is susceptible to some of the backdoor and pace or some of the three-point shooting if you can, you know, get open, because Texas is aggressive and will rotate and overcommit and close out. And if you're dedicated discipline, you have the ball movement, the Greg Popovich, you know, good to great offense where you find the extra pass, you can get some open looks, and three-pointers, defending that against really good three-point shooting teams has been their Achilles heel. So when Vic got called the Minister of Defense by Aliyah Moore, who's just wonderful, it was correct, because Gonzaga was coming in as maybe the best three-point shooting team in the country, averaging over 9 a game at 40%, and Texas held them to 4 for 22. You said, okay, they've got something figured out. But after playing Alabama, one of the fastest teams in the country, and beating them, and then playing Gonzaga, maybe the best three-point shooting team in the country, and beating them, somehow NC State, who's just truly the team of destiny, right? It's not our fault we had to play a team that somehow, you know, I don't know what Faustian deal with the devil they've performed to get both of their men's and women's teams out of nowhere into the Final Four. But, you know, you couldn't beat that team with that kind of deal with the devil. But no, I'm not talking about Kim Mulkey. Anyways, I'm kidding. Let's keep it relevant here. After going fast and then defending the three, having defended a team that was hitting them with backdoor cuts, running hard, and hitting all their shots, right? I mean, truly give credit to their best players stepping up and you know, but that was, I think, the difference as much as anything. And Gerald, you mentioned the way the officials were calling it. I don't think it was unfair to either team. They just were very offensive fouls were very common, and Texas is a physical team, right? That's a lot. Well, you saw U of H on the men's side, right? If you're the more physical team and they're calling it light, you're going to get in foul trouble. And it felt like Texas had a lot of offensive fouls, had some fouls inside. It just, when you get into foul trouble and you get out of your rotations this late in the season, it's tough. You're hoping someone steps up. And then when the thing that got you there the second half of this season, Maddie Booker, had admittedly her two worst games of the season. I don't know if it's the fatigue of carrying the entire team, you know, the fatigue of being a three guard, a you know, non-point guard your entire career, and then having to take over and setting the Texas all-time freshman assist record, breaking Rory Harmon's record in the last game. Incredible performance. But having to do all of that and, you know, run the offense and be the main, you know, engine taking shots and really your offense being predicated on, you know, mid-range and great KD-like moves to create space and get yourself open. If you're just, you know, not locked in by a quarter inch, you know, and it felt like she may have been, especially in the NC State game with Maddie Booker just hitting rim but not getting that sweet swish she usually gets. It's tough that Texas needed to score the way that NC State was scoring to keep up. And you know, they struggled a bit, especially once they started hitting threes and Texas had no answer. As much as they shut down Gonzaga, they also hit 5-for-10 in that game. So, and then they couldn't hit against NC State, and NC State just kept hitting threes. You saw the game play out right there.
And it was funny to watch people who this was their first Texas women's basketball game over the year. You and I are big fans, but we've also lamented on several different occasions that one of the biggest struggles of this team on the offensive side is just missing bunnies. And that was, again, part of the problem for Texas in this matchup, right? Texas had a ton of opportunities close to the rim. They had a ton of offensive rebounds, and they just could not capitalize. They could not get those easy shots in the basket. And when you're playing a team, like you said, that's going to just shoot lights out, you got a player going 6-for-7 from three-point range. You have to capitalize on every single stinking opportunity you get, and Texas just didn't seem to be able to do that, again, especially from inside the paint. And so that, to me, was the big story. And I mean, it's not fitting is not the right word, but you know, when you think about the dangers of this Texas team, these are the things that we expected to bite them in the keister when it came to NCAA tournament time. And lo and behold, that's what happened. They could not, a night happened when the defense not broke down, but a team that just shot lights out. Like, there's nothing you could really do for someone who's going 6-of-7 from three-point range. There's absolutely nothing you can do.
Seven for nine from three-point range. Yeah, even better.
Nine. Yeah. There's nothing you can do. Like, you can try. Like, you put a hand in her face and hope she misses, right? Pray, you know. But it just didn't work. And so that is, again, part of what Texas has to deal with. So season is over for the ladies. But again, we talked about it before. We'll talk about it again. They have overachieved something fierce in this one. Texas, you know, going to the SEC, they're going to have to play teams like this. They've got South Carolina in the SEC. They've got LSU in the SEC. So Texas, honestly, I think will be even as good as the Big 12 has been historically, will be even more prepared to play games like this in the future, because the SEC, one of the best women's basketball conferences in the country. It's them and the Pac-12 is going away. So, I mean, probably the SEC gets the title by default. But Texas finishes the year with just this. This is ridiculous. If you told me this when Rory Harmon got hurt, I would not have believed you. Texas finishes the year with just 5 losses, 33-5 on the year, 17-2 at home, 9-2 on the road, 7-1 at neutral site. So Texas, Vic Schaefer has a great core coming back. We know one player will not be part of that. Shea Gonzalez officially declared on Tuesday she would be a part of the NFL draft after Shea Gonzalez officially announced that she has exhausted all of her eligibility and will be going to the WNBA draft. Great contributions from her. Absolutely huge player for Texas. And Texas has, again, a ton of great recruits. We saw Gisella Mall, who was a big recruit last year, come in and made the only three-pointer in that game. So there's a lot left on the table for Texas and Vic Schaefer. And next year should be, hopefully, more of the same.
And I'll just say, Gerald, the 33 wins, the most ever in a season besides their 86 championship game where they went 34-0. They, you know, this was a great team that you think about how great the defense, especially, but also just the patience, consistency of Rory Harmon, right? When it felt like Maddie Booker was forced into it, the 7 turnovers against Gonzaga and forcing it a little in the second game. You have, you know, that veteran point guard coming next year. It's going to be scary for teams when Maddie Booker is your second ball handler, your off ball handler. When Harmon does sit, you know, that's who's running the offense, because it does feel like her offense is predicated on her hitting her shot. Rory's a little bit more just, you know, run the offense first. But anyways, that combination together will be monstrous. Plus, like you said, replacing Shayla Gonzalez with two incredible top 10 players coming in next year and losing no one else, basically getting Shea Holly, getting Jack and Gisella Mall and others a year more experience, right? They're young players stepping up. I honestly wonder where the minutes are going to come from. That's going to be the biggest challenge for Texas next year, is they're like 9 deep and really, really good players all around. So I am so excited for next year for Vic's team. I think it was his 5th year when he got to a Final Four at Mississippi State. So he's right on schedule, though. This team should have been there this year, injuries withstanding. But, you know, this team is right where they should be. They're lined up. They, you know, made us proud this year. Vic is just an incredible coach who's beloved by his teammates, the Minister of Defense. Aaliyah Moore is stepping up the way we knew she would. You know, the bigs inside, Taylor Jones coming back from the concussion and you know, playing gutsy basketball. Like, just really love every part of this team. And ultimately, this will be a season that I remember just incredibly fondly, even though it didn't finish as a number one seed where they hoped it would in that Final Four. An unbelievable, unbelievable season given all they had to overcome.
Absolutely, Kyle. So Texas, again, has one of its marquee seasons in school history, but unable to get over that hump. We'll see. Obviously, they'll be back, barring, I don't know, the school disbanding the women's basketball program. I anticipate us getting another chance to cheer for them at the national level this time next year. Speaking of teams that went to the playoffs, football is back. We've talked about spring practice several times already, but Steve Sarkisian spoke to the media on Tuesday to discuss where his team is at, what they're doing currently in spring practice, and who's showing up. Some things that stuck out of the conversation: they're getting a lot of new looks at defensive backs, guys playing multiple spots. Ryan Wingo is a guy that was specifically called out by name as somebody who has been impressive of the young guys. I think when you sign a five-star wide receiver of his caliber, you expect them to show up and show out. And so I think things are looking up, especially with Texas's needs in the wide receiver room. So I'm excited to see how that shapes up. And then, man, that you and I, near and dear to our heart, Quintrevion Wisner, who again, best name in the biz, maybe. But anywho, Trey Wisner got called out by name as well by Steve Sarkisian as somebody who is working quite hard and kind of showing up and being kind of a dude. Texas fans fell in love with him during some of his garbage time work last year. He was a special teams ace for Texas as well. But here's the quote: the one thing about Trey, he's right there at the top of the rep, and it's paying dividends for him because he's been a really good runner. He's catching the ball out of the backfield. He's been great on special teams. I think his understanding schematically of what we're doing is growing, and so I do foresee him having a role with us in the fall. He was a guy who felt like an add-on or an almost ran last year for a lot of reasons as part of that recruiting class, and now he looks like a guy who's going to be I hesitate to say an integral part, but he's going to be a guy who has a part to play for Texas next year, and that's so awesome to see.
Yeah, and you know, they mentioned he could play that that Keelan Robinson role, meaning, you know, the change of pace back, catching passes, you know, doing it all, also being a special team savant. He's just that team first player that I think every player in the locker room loves. He's that kind of alpha dog personality as well. Just love everything that he brings to the team, and excited to see him in there. One guy, of course, we knew who's coming back, but had a great quote earlier this week was Quinn Ewers, when mentioned, you know, what played in his decision to come back. And I loved his quote. He basically said he's been rushing his entire life, in a hurry his entire life, and he's just kind of taken his time to enjoy it. And Sark responded to that in his presser today, basically saying, that's great that he's back. I get to coach him harder than I ever have. There's things, I think the exact quote was, you know, the fun part for me is I get to keep coaching him hard, and I get to keep coaching him hard on stuff that maybe I wasn't as hard on him within the past. That's how you keep pushing a guy to be the best he can be. He's taking the coaching, he's playing at a really high level. So I think that's a great sign, right, for what we all want to see, which is Quinn's settled now. Sark feels comfortable with that rapport between the two of them, multi-year starter, pushing him, giving more of the playbook, really opening it up and challenging what he can do, and maybe seeing those improvements, because Sark is not going to go easy on him. He expects a lot from him. So excited to see that. Also excited to hear just that we have a lot of guys playing multiple spots in the defensive back room, right? With Jahdae Barron back, probably helps a lot with versatility. You know, what he can do all over the place. I like if we have a young but also deep and you know, multifaceted backfield that again, we're playing walk-ons because they're so good at making plays, not because, well, shoot, he's the only guy who could play there, which again is absolutely no shade at the Taft interception factory. I love my local kids getting into the Texas defensive backfield there for sure. But I like us having lots of options across the entire defensive backfield, as we've seen so far through some early practices.
It goes back to that. You want it to be a get to, not a have to, right? Or they right. Have to because they're so good, not have to because we have no other options. So, again, not a ton of new news out of that, but the spring game is on the horizon. We'll obviously have more coverage of that. Last little bit of football news. Former Ole Miss cornerbacks coach Kenodo Hudson great name, say that three times fast, is expected to join the Texas staff as an analyst. Sark has some familiarity with him, worked with him at USC. Again, he's a guy who is in need of a job and is a solid coach. He's got a pretty good rep in the coaching circles. And so getting those guys in Austin as analysts, one, gives you another guy in the room that can help. But also, if you have a need at a DB coach spot, you've got a guy waiting in the wings.
And like I talked about, that a lot of guys, you know, multiple playing, just having another experienced set of eyes, a guy who coached the position to be just an extra set of hands back there. Remember in the offseason when we got Arizona's defensive coordinator, there's a lot of whispers of Dwayne Aquina was coming with him. So there was a spot to be filled there at the analyst position when Aquina didn't come. I love going out and getting a young coach who's coached in the SEC as well there.
So that brings us to the part of the show where we whip around the rest of campus and we down the 40. We'll start with the national championship competition. Number 7, swimming, finished 7th at nationals, giving Eddie Reese in his last tournament his 44th top 10 finish to end his career. Texas brought home a gold and had double-digit All-Americans in this one, but could not get itself to the top of the podium.
Yeah, Luke Hobson won that gold in the 200 free, a repeat of last year's second consecutive national championship. But this year set the NCAA American University of Texas and pool records in that 200 free in the finals. He set it originally, the record in a prelim, and then an Arizona State swimmer broke his record in the next swim. So it was a hotly contested final, and Hobson came out on top. So great to see that for him. He also won a silver in the 500 free. Another school record set by Will Moglen in the 100 back. So like Gerald said, 12 All-Americans, 19 honorable mention, lot to celebrate. And, you know, Eddie Reese is a legend. And as he came back, I believe he officially retires after, you know, Olympic trials in June. But this was it. This was the final in an epic, almost 50-year career, just a legend and a classy guy who went out, didn't win in his last one. What a Cinderella story that would have been. But again, just always great program under Eddie Reese, even at the end when he came back basically as a favor, already retired once and came back to help bridge until they could get the next coach, which we'll talk about in just a moment.
We'll talk about that in just a moment. 12 All-Americans, 19 honorable mentions. Texas poised to do something big. We'll talk more about that in BOL. Baseball. They have this thing of making me mad on Friday and then making me forget it by Sunday. But won its second consecutive Big 12 series, taking 2 of 3 at number 23 Kansas State in Manhattan over the weekend. Went up 3-0. Then LeBaron Johnson got chased in the second inning, gave up 8, lost 14-6. We're going to gloss over that one. Other than LBJ's been having some weird struggles these last couple of games. Yeah, I'm not sure what's going on with him there. But they decided to hit all of the runs on Saturday. Go with a 21-11 win, 13 runs in the 7th, 8th, and 9th innings to come out with that one. And then on Sunday, a 6-3 win over Kansas State in that one. Again, a mix of good pitching, solid hitting, and came out with a win, right? Always win on Sundays, and that's what Texas has been seemingly like making its mark in the Big 12 with.
There was, after the 14-6 loss on Friday, there was some swagger in Manhattan. Nick English, who's having a great year for Kansas State, remember they'd won 10 straight at this point. They were atop the Big 12 conference on Friday. He said, "We don't care what name is on the chest of the other opponent. We're going to kick the shit out of you." That's a direct quote that was published by the Mercury, the local Manhattan newspaper. That was Friday. Kansas State gave up 27 runs, and Nick English went 0 for 10 in the two games after his comment in Texas when they were posting the highlights of the weekend series win. Just posted TEXAS is the name on the chest. I love it. A little bit of pettiness, but you know, you could talk your noise. We've always said that. You could put the horns down. You could talk your trash, but just be ready to back it up, because Texas basically exploded in the end of that second, that Saturday game, and carried that momentum into Sunday. But it was similar to you know, some lead changes we saw. It was 8-3 Texas early lead on Saturday. It looked like, all right, they're going to get this thing evened up. Kansas State ties it at 8. Oh, no. Texas goes up. Okay, we're up 11-8. Kansas State tied it in the bottom of the seventh. It was crazy. And then it got crazier when Texas scored 10 runs over the final two innings. Just a real explosion. 21 runs on 22 hits in that Saturday game. 6 doubles, 4 homers. Galvan went 5-for-6 with 3 doubles, 5 RBI. Max went 4-for-6 with a double home run, 5 RBIs. Jalen Flores, 4-for-5 with a double home run, 3 RBIs. It was a offense extravaganza. Multiple guys getting 3 hits. We didn't even get named there. Gage Boehm came in and basically closed it out effectively, but got the win with 1.2 scoreless innings to pick up the win there. Sunday was the Max Grubb show, though, Gerald. This has been the Sunday lately, and you always win on Sundays. You want to either series sweep or get the series win. Sunday's so important. He went 6 innings, 1 earned, 6 hits, 5 strikeouts, which is ties his career high, 1 walk to improve to 4-0 on the year. And what you love to see is Dre Duplantier got his second save of the season. So this was a series in which Texas, you know, won in different ways and almost had 3 different styles of baseball. Getting some consistency will be key. I don't know that it's sustainable to lose every Friday and still hope to win every series, but as they sit right now, they sit 1 game off first place, even though Texas fans have bemoaned, and rightfully so, some midweek losses, some inconsistent pitching, some issues out of the bullpen. The issues are all there, right? If they get the bats lined up, it's never the fact that they can generate runs and hit for power. That isn't their issue this year, though sometimes they do dry up at inopportune times. But figuring out consistency and figuring out the pitching will determine how the season actually goes for the remainder.
Yeah, and this is one of those, like, both things can be true, right? Like, Texas is winning series, and they're within striking distance of a conference regular season, at least championship, right? We can also be frustrated with the head coach who has now fired 2 pitching coaches still not figuring it out, right? Both those things can exist at the same time and be true. And again, Texas is winning. That's fine. I'm great with that. I'm never going to be mad about winning. But also, like, You were LeBaron Johnson was supposed to be your ace, and he's been struggling. You've got opportunities there. The bullpen has also had some breakdowns. Like, I'm not sure what it is. But again, I'm not going to look a gift horse in the mouth. Texas won both of those. Tanner Witt, following the series, Texas announced that Tanner Witt's going to miss extended time with an injury. Hasn't pitched since March 10th, but he'll be out for a bit. But currently up for Texas, playing a midweek against Abilene Christian, currently up 10-0 in the bottom of the seventh. So that one seems to be pretty in hand, on verge of a run rule. They can pull up another one. Then they've got BYU this weekend to keep things rolling in the Big 12. Texas softball, number 2 softball, falls to number 8 Oklahoma State in Stillwater. Got shut out on Friday 5-0, won on Saturday 2-1, and then was shut out again on Sunday 3-0. That was that Saturday game, that Sunday game, really tough to swallow on that one.
Yeah, I mean, you working backwards, right? That Sunday game, you basically opened up, you get the first out, you let Oklahoma State in the first inning get the first runner due to an error. You hit the next player, reach base, but hit by pitch. And then the fourth player up with 2 runners on hits a 3-run shot. And then Oklahoma State doesn't reach base again. Like, it's just so devastating, because let's say you don't have the error. You know, even if you do hit by a pitch, I guess you're down 2. But let's say you don't hit by a pitch, whatever. If that's a solo shot, maybe there's a difference in this game. I don't know. It's terrible when Texas pitches that well and can't scratch anything across. But all weekend, you know, give credit to Oklahoma State's arms. They were incredible, right? In that Sunday game, Kilfoyle threw a 2-hitter for Oklahoma State, when that's why Texas couldn't answer that first inning, right? Friday, the familiar theme of this season, right? Texas went down 1-0 in the first and just couldn't battle back. They had 7 hits in that one and still couldn't get a run across, stranded a couple people on second and third with 1 out early on in that one. And then, you know, Saturday, the win, I will say, if you want to take something from this series, it was Oklahoma State's first loss at home this season. They're a very good team, but especially at home, they are tough to beat with that pitching that they have and a good crowd. You know, they take softball seriously in the state of Oklahoma. We all know that. But Sitlali Gutierrez was electric in that one, and that's what it takes to beat these Oklahoma teams. Is you got to have everyone working. If your bats aren't generating the runs, you need some masterpieces on the mound, and they got one from Sitlali Gutierrez on Saturday.
You need masterpieces, but not masterpiece in that one. Again, OSU's first home loss of the season. Texas goes back home for the first time in 3 weeks to take on the number one Oklahoma Sooners in a Friday, Saturday, Sunday series. Again, a first pitch on Friday is when that giveaway ends. You'll find it on our Twitter. You should see it by the time you're listening to this podcast on Wednesday. Texas in the middle of a 13-game streak against ranked opponents, including six of the top 10. Again, they have that Oklahoma State and OU back to back for that one. On the hard surface, number four men's tennis goes 2-0 against Big 12 foes, on the verge of sweeping the weekend, but those dirty dirt burglars in Lubbock kept us from doing it. BYU 4-0 in Provo, and then 4-1 in Lubbock. Won seven straight matches undefeated in conference, and that was their first drop set since the 14th.
That's right, the first drop set in conference. Provo was their fourth straight sweep. That was doubles plus Baziri, GAB, and our guy, Mr. Woldiab. And then Tech, it was doubles plus some other names, Lucas Brown, Cleve Harper, and Jonah Braswell, getting those wins in first. So, you know, like to see the whole roster getting represented there, but it's looking good for a team that seems to really have locked their mentality and really snapped in after some we've talked about it each week, basically, as they get further into their win streak and further from the adversity. They seem to have some teams fold and snap from that, and others become resilient and become stronger from it. It looks certainly like the number four, I think I mentioned that number would keep shrinking, men's tennis team is playing like the hottest team in the country.
They are absolutely doing that. Up next, they've got the road trip continuing, going to spend some time in Oklahoma. Number 26 Oklahoma State on Friday, and then number 22 OU on Saturday. The ladies had a road trip of their own and were undefeated on that one. Got 4-2 win over Kansas in Lawrence, and then 4-1 win over Iowa State in Ames.
Yeah, that's right. That's a pretty good Kansas team, receiving votes, Kansas. The that one, they got doubles plus wins for Charlotte Shavatapone, Shafe Lieberman, and Tanya Sasnuaskaya. Excuse me. They beat Iowa State 4-1 with the doubles win plus Vivian Vrutsky, again, our girl CC, and TP, that's Tasha Pachikaleva. Solid on both sides. The top 10 Texas tennis is now a 4T. Lock it in. Top 10 Texas is your 3Ts. Top 10 Texas tennis, terrific, is 5Ts. I don't know. I'm going to stop. But both teams looking great, looking for Big 12 titles on their way out of the conference.
Absolutely love it. Next up for them, they finally get to come back home. Got Texas Tech on Thursday, BYU on Saturday. Keeping it country club, number 7 women's golf finishes 9th at the Ping ASU Invitational. Finished day 3 strong, but struggled in day 2, so they really couldn't dig out of it. But again, competing well, have an opportunity to continue to compete this weekend.
Yeah, Angela here led the Longhorns, finished tied for 21st individually. She moved up 17 spots on the final day. I think there's three different players who moved up more than double digit spots on that final day. Coach, took responsibility on himself and said he has to get the team ready to play every day. Don't know if Longhorns were looking ahead to both their next week either being in Augusta or in Napa, opposite sides of the country for the team, but equally gorgeous destinations. They're playing in Napa at Silverado, which I actually didn't play, but stayed at Silverado when I was out in Napa earlier this year. And goodness, it's one of the most just gorgeous courses. Glass of wine at sunset at Silverado, it may be heaven on earth.
Humble brag much, Kyle. Humble brag much. No, it's all good. Finally, next up for them, like I said, Napa. This weekend, April 8th through the 10th, next week, April 8th through the 10th, for the Silverado Showdown. The Bevo team, beach volleyball, goes 3-1 at the Islander Classic. They defeated UT Martin, Stephen F. Austin, and UTEP, but then fell in a close match to the hosts, number 20, Texas A&M Corpus Christi. Feels unfair as a non-beach school to have to play beach schools. That neither here nor there. Close one for them. And then finally, closing out BOL, or closing out down the 40. The biggest event on the 40, 96th annual Texas Relays. Texas showed out at their home meet and had a fun time doing it.
That's right. This familiar name will never tire singing his praises. Just one of the best athletes in the world, literally. Right now, our guy, the Nuge, Leo Neugenbauer, records third best decathlon score in NCAA history after himself and one other score, wins his third straight Relays decathlon, breaks the NCAA decathlon shot put record. He just keeps picking an event to be the best at out of the many events that he excels at. So Leo, incredible. Jeremiah Nubby broke his own Texas record winning the hammer throw. They swept the long jump. Solomon Washington, the only jumper to go over 8 meters on this one. And then Aaliyah Foster, freshman, winning on the women's side. The race that I loved, well, they won multiple relays. Knowlton Shelvin, John Rutledge, Brian Heron, and Yusuf Bizimana won the sprint medley, which is a fun race. Different distance for each runner at their preference. But the race, I think the 4x1 is the marquee race in track. I think we all kind of understand that. The 100, certainly, but the 4x1 just has that special pizzazz to it around the entire track. The team of Marcellus Moore, Knowlton Shelvin, Almond Small, and John Rutledge, that's Texas Cowboy. John Rutledge won the men's 4x1 100-meter relay with a time of 39.22. And I get it. Maybe you've heard another time from high school kids, and I get that. That's fine. But it was a big deal. It was a big deal. The first time Texas has won that event at the Texas Relay since 1990. Woo. Gerald, it's been a long time coming. And even in that race, it was a long time coming. Rutledge, again, Texas Cowboy, John Rutledge, as they have a first Newman class in a couple years, and he's a part of it. A big, big come from behind. They were not leading when he took the baton, and he ate up Tech and I believe another team and got across the line in first place.
Don't hate to hear when they eat up Texas Tech. On the ladies' side, Allison Little won the 3,000-meter, too many meters, steeplechase. That's the run-and-get-wet situation. Sixth-best mark in school history. Crystal Herpin won the shot put with the second-longest throw in school history. And then Akayla Garrett won the women's 400-meter hurdles, which, again, running and jumping. Combining two events just seems a little ridiculous, if you ask me.
you sometimes combine 10 of them as Leo the Nuge and our girl Christine Blazevic. We only mentioned the winners.
The 10 combination, Kyle. I've not been shy about that.
It's not easy to do that. But Texas Relays, always success, always a cultural event, always a thing, and we'll talk a little bit about it to kick off our next section. Even the alums had something to do. Texas Relays just brings out a special energy in the track and field world. So I'll jump right into it, Gerald. Time for some burnt orange lenses. We take a look at the rest of the world through those burnt orange lenses and keeping it on the Clyde Littlefield Texas Relays. Three Texas X's plus one great British Olympian, not Bake Off champion, but Olympian. That's Lene Tava-Thomas, Rasadat Adeleke, and Julian Alfred, names you certainly are familiar with if you listen to this podcast in the previous years, along with British Olympian Dinah Asher-Smith, combined to run a world best time in the women's 4x2. And, you know, no surprise here. Julian Alfred is an absolute monster. Her anchor leg of a 20.8 matches Marion Jones, just one of the best track athletes of all time. Yeah, no big deal. With the all-time fastest anchor leg in a 4x2 ever ran.
I mean, I don't know what else to say, Kyle. Like, she is going to set most of the track world on fire. Continuing again, a 28 is just stupid. Like, just stupid stuff.
Yeah, I just love that these events we get to talk about, because I miss Rasadat Adeleke and Julian Alfred especially listing off their wins and records every week. So good to have them back on the 40. Speaking of good to have them on the 40, Gerald, we teased this a little bit earlier. Bob Bowman, announced by Texas as the director of swimming, director of swimming and diving, and head men's coach. Gerald, where have we heard that name before?
Standing atop the leaderboards this most recent NCAA championship weekend. On the quote about him, apparently he got a message from Chris Del Conte about his interest, and he replied, "I've got to go win a national championship real quick. Let me get back with you." Like, that's what Texas is bringing in. Coach Michael Phelps, also a U.S. national team. Like, basically they're just replacing. I use this metaphor in the BON Slack channel. This is like if Nick Saban retired and you went and hired Kirby Smart from Georgia. Like, that's the metaphor that I'm using here, except better.
Honestly, better, because just because Kirby don't know no Olympics. Bob Bowman, yes, he came 2 days after transforming. This is an Arizona State program. I just want to make it clear to folks. In I think the late 20, the aughts, they were considering cutting just the funding for it because it was a money suck, basically. It was having no return on investment. He gets hired as the coach, takes a cellar dweller team, you know, 9 seasons, goes consecutive conference titles, a national runner-up last year, and then a dominant, almost 80-point victory over a Cal team that's really been asserting itself on the men's swimming side. And don't forget, when he was at Michigan, he led them to four straight top 8 finishes in each of his 4 years there. Like, he's as good as it gets just in the college rank. He's been great at the age rank, specifically leading up to coaching kids pre-college as well, and then a multi-time coach of the U.S. national team. I believe his swimmers have set 43 world records and more than 50 American records under his guidance. You say, wow, that's a lot. Well, don't forget, he was the longtime coach of one Michael Phelps. So this is a guy who's already in the Swimming Hall of Fame. Like, think about that. He's young enough that he still has many years ahead of him. I don't know if he coaches to Eddie Reese's age. He can go until his 80s. Many years ahead of him, he's already in the Hall of Fame. A pretty good follow. Like, Del Conte, like, you saw it with Stein Metzger in the beach volleyball. He got a guy who finished his national runner-up, his alma mater, you know, where he was one of the best paid coaches in the country, and pulled him to Texas. Eldrick Floreal, one of the best coaches, Vic Schaefer. There's a tradition or a patented CDC system where it's go out and get the absolute best. Like, he doesn't – ain't no half-stepping. Now, some people may point to Rodney Terry. There's a bit of an emotional hire in that, and I still am rooting for Coach Terry. But his general trend of a Del Conte, air quotes, hire is go get the best, whip them with money, give them the chance to coach in Texas, and tell them it'll elevate you to an even, you know, different level, as you saw with Dave O'Neill in the rowing program, right? It's the best come to Texas. This is top 10 Texas and then some. And he's just the 7th head coach in program history, by the way. Keeping it moving, Gerald, a couple high schoolers we want to celebrate tonight, actually, as we're recording this. Women's basketball signees Justice Carlton, Jordan Lee, competing the McDonald's All-American game, both on the same West team. On the women's side, they are the 28th and 29th Longhorns ever represented. Those are both top 10. We talked about the team Vic has next year, number 7 and 8, I believe, in most sites. And then on the men's side, men's basketball signee Trey Johnson competing immediately following that, the 23rd men's basketball player representing the Longhorns at the All-American game.
Absolute bucket, just on fire. He is going to be, I've heard him, I'm keeping up with Twitter stuff as we record, and I've heard people calling it Durantian, how he just takes over and scores. It's pretty impressive.
Absolutely love to hear that. It's it leads maybe a little bit into, we have two kind of wing scorers joining, Chris Johnson being the one in the All-American game, but we also have another high four-star coming in, and that may lead to the news that we have next. Keeping it basketball, former four-star from Montverde via Houston, Chris Johnson announced that he is entering the transfer portal.
Yeah, that's a guy who it's you struggle to lose him. He was a late flip from Kansas, right? And, you know, Texas was really trying to hold things together, right? They were decimated by guys going pro and things like that. So, you know, he was a locker room guy. He was a bench guy that Texas really liked to have for culture. But I think, you know, part of the issue is, like, Texas is bringing in some elite talent, and he probably will end up buried on the depth chart because his four-star had a lot of development in it, right? And I think that's part of it. He's got a longer development curve, and so bringing in a guy like Trey Johnson, who's going to step on campus and be one of the two best players on the team, it's just hard to stick around for that.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you want to keep the talent with the, and he's just outside the top 50, number 53 last year's class. You want to keep the talent and build that pipeline. You hope that he buys into being a development guy, but I totally understand if he has a chance to go be a stronger contributor after he didn't play a ton this year behind some more experienced players. But a guy who put his time in on the 40 acres and fulfilled a lifelong dream, joining him in the portal, Gavin Perryman, as a grad transfer, didn't play a ton. He was kind of one of our victory cigars who got put in, but could shoot the heck out of the basketball, and that's no surprise given his father, Brandy Perryman, finished his career as UT's all-time most accurate free throw shooter, a 90% shooter there, and I think he was fifth all-time on their three-pointers list as well. Closing us out, women's golf freshman Farrah O'Keefe and Lauren Kim will compete in the 2024 Augusta National Women's Amateur. We mentioned the team going to the West Coast next weekend, but this weekend, two players from that team getting to play the most prestigious course just in advance of the most prestigious event preceding the Masters.
This is the fifth year that the event is taking place in advance of the Masters. And so, again, it's great. Texas will probably see a dip in, like, you know, they've got tournaments and things like that around it, but awesome opportunity for them get their names out there and get that experience, that tournament experience.
All right, Joe, let's take it home with some of our closing segments here. A bit of Godzillatron, what have you been watching on your giant screen?
I will keep mine brief because I didn't do a ton. It was my wife's birthday this weekend, so I was on dad duty. I kept the kids out of her hair while she got to read and nap and read and nap, and that was what she wanted to do. So we did it. But I started to listen to Dune on audiobooks. I hadn't actually listened to it. And as I re-listened to it, some of the weird takes people had about Dune Part 2, it's a victim of having to split those two movies up to tell the right story, because so much of, like, the weird, like, misunderstanding of the narrative of Part 2 comes because, like, a lot of the setup for it, like, Paul is a bad person, comes in Part 1, so I just refreshed on that. And then for family movie night, we did Lego Batman, always a thriller. My son had never seen it, but so much fun, hilarious. Those Lego movies killed it, ton of fun. I don't have anything else to say about that.
Love it. I love it. Ton of fun. I watched a very fun. I watched it. It's a great movie. I don't know if it's a fun movie. I watched Oppenheimer finally. Gerald, I assume you've seen Oppenheimer?
I've not actually.
Oh, okay. Okay. So I'm the first. Usually you watch something and then, like, 2 months later, I talk about me also watching it. But yeah, so Oppenheimer, if you've been under a rock, of course, is the, you know, Academy Award winning, you know, all-star cast, all-star director, Oscar bait, you know, story. I assume everyone knows the father of the atom bomb, Mr. Oppenheimer. I guess some people may not, but an important figure in world history, U.S. history. It's an interesting film. It's very long. It's a good solid 3 hours. We actually watched it almost like a mini series. We watched it in three parts, not because we meant to. We just, you know, one night my wife fell asleep, one night we had something to do, and so we kind of broke it up, which I don't know if that's the way you're supposed to watch it, but it is streaming now. I bet it would have been even better to watch in a theater screen on the giant screen, because it is, you know, well shot. Cinematography is great. The time and place captured the actual, like, intensity of an atom bomb. But it's Cillian Murphy is just real, real good in everything that he does. So I get it. It is not a movie that, like, oh man, I'll watch that every year, I don't think, because the subject matter is tough, but they don't shy away from that. And you see how he is reckoning with the decision and the power and the death and the destruction of what he did. So I appreciated that. I was a little bit hesitant going in of just like, is this a glorifying of the bomb? But anyways, it's certainly well worth a watch. It is an expensive, lavish, well-shot, well-made, well-acted, well-crafted film, as good as I've seen in many years. And the other thing I've been enjoying is Cowboy Carter. And that, of course, is Beyonce's second part to her Renaissance album. And it is incredible. It's really, truly incredible. Everyone should listen if you haven't already. Some say, oh, it's a country album. How progressive. And there are certainly 100% country elements, her cover of Jolene, but her cover of Blackbird, by, you know, written by Paul McCartney, is, like, it's tear-inducing, and her folks who she features on it are very thoughtful and very selective. The musicianship is incredible. The genres do go wildly all over the place. There are certainly country elements, but it's, you know, there's like 80s Radiohead themes on some of the songs. Like there's just a lot in this album, and you know, there's some skits thrown in, and it's not quite as long as the track list makes it seem, but it'll take you on a journey. There'll be some songs you love, some songs you get out of your seat to. It's just a really, 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 really good. Again, if you want to juxtapose two things that are incredibly well crafted, Oppenheimer and Cowboy Carter, opposite ends of the spectrum in every way, but the artisanship, the craft, the art, incredible in both.
That brings us to the part of the show where we honor one of the best traditions in all of college athletics, Big Bertha, and we bang the drum, brought to you by Joe Ruiz. So, Kyle, what are you banging the drum on this week?
I could have said it in my Godzillatron. I've been watching a ton of women's basketball, but women's basketball has been capturing. As we said at the beginning of this tournament, the stars are there. We've seen them out. It's been great basketball. Maybe the most theater out of this entire tournament has been one Kim Mulkey. And look, yes, her faces and reactions to Caitlin Clark, you know, checking a wet ball, or just every play that happened in her whining and facial, you know, reactions to the ref. Sure. But really the item in question was, and we talked about it in our last podcast, was her reaction to an article that hadn't come out. Now that article, that Washington Post article on her has come out, and it was an absolute nothing burger, It asks a couple questions. One, what did she think they were going to write? Two, like, is she literally just this much of a victim human being that someone asking for her, you know, ability to participate as, you know, capital J journalists are, you know, beheld to do, makes her just get on the defensive? I don't know. It just... everything about the way that she handled this, the calling it a hit job, the, you know, disparaging the entire journalistic industry, disparaging this reporter for 2 years, trying to get a quote from her, doing his job doggedly. It reiterates, I think, honestly, I'll just say it, everything that's wrong with this country. I think that's it. That's in one nutshell, the victimhood, you know, interrogation of anything that's maybe not even for sure, but slightly antithetical to your own views or your own opinion. So just reinforced everything bad about Kim Mulkey. And I saw a tweet that basically said if her defense on Caitlin Clark would have been even a tenth of her defense of a nothing piece in the Washington Post, they may have beat Iowa. But, you know, it's great that everyone basically got to imagine how bad this could have been. I just hate it wasn't the explosive story that ultimately got her fired and ended her career. But that's just me.
There's something to be said about the inherent demonization of media by specific segments of the population, but we'll leave that there for now. I'm going to stick on women's basketball, but I'm just going to talk really briefly about women's sports and women's basketball being on the forefront. Kyle and I have built this podcast. If you're a longtime listener of this podcast, you know it's intentional that we try to give as much coverage to the women's teams as the men's teams. For a long time, it was out of self-preservation because the men's team sucked and the women's teams were the only ones that were doing good things. But also, those athletes work their tails off week in and week out to try to represent the university, and they deserve if you're a fan of the University of Texas, but you don't cheer for women's athletics, you don't, like, it's just you are just a fan of football, right? Or whatever. So, but this was different. This weekend was different. And especially on Monday night, part of the reason why we didn't record on Monday was getting to watch this game. The world stopped. The sports world stopped. There were NBA games, there were baseball games happening, and the world, there was Monday Night Raw, and the world was talking about the NCAA women's basketball tournament, right? Like, the stars were there, the stars were out. It was the main subject on Twitter. People were making all of the dumb Twitter jokes like they do on a college football Saturday or an NFL Saturday. Haley Van Lith was getting just drugged because, well, Kim Mulkey's defensive design in that game was about as good as my 7-year-old's. Like, but it was just so cool to see. And the numbers came out on Tuesday. 12.3 million people tuned in to watch that game. That just ready for this, was more than every NBA game last season, except for game five of the NBA Finals, more than every college football game last year, other than the CFP, the OSU-Michigan game, and the SEC championship game, and more than every other MLB game last year. When you publicize these things, when you put the stars at the forefront and you tell their stories, good things happen. Women's sports deserve as much attention as we could possibly give them. And we saw that on Monday, that it was just, it was an absolute show. It lived up to the hype. I had a blast.
Yeah, it's good. Support women's sports, put it at the forefront, invest in it, give it the same slick broadcast package, whatever, you know, treat it the same, build it, they will come.
And that's all we've got for you this week. Kyle, where can the good folks find you on the internet?
Oh, you can follow me on Twitter at Kyle Carpenter. You can also follow the Texas Pregamer at Texas Pregamer.
Follow me on Twitter at GH Goodridge. Follow the show on Twitter at Longhorn Pod. Facebook, Instagram, Longhorn Republic. Shoot us an email, longhornrepublicpod@gmail.com. We'll be back next week. And until then, hook 'em.
Hook 'em. One more shot at Kim Mulkey.
One more road to...